The Money Show.
Business Books.
On to Stephen Timm this evening, the author of a book called At Any Cost. Talk to me about Era Eyal, Stephen.
You mean Iran, Iranial.
Iran, I beg your pardon. See, I was typing really fast, and I'm incredibly weary today. So forgive me. Iran Eyal, spelled E-R-A-N with an N at the end of E-R-A.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I didn't write an autobiography here, but it's kind of it's the tale of of how this convicted fraudster in the tech world, born in Israel, came to South Africa when he was 1 year old, up in Durban and Cape Town and he hit big in New York for a while, was making lots of money, ran three startups, and those, the three startups that he ran that he was convicted for fraud over, basically just one white lie about business led to the next, you tell enough lies, you can get, you make out your company into something it isn't, and investors are piling money in. And next thing you tell them, oh, there's no money left. And they want to go. Then they say, where's the money? So,
Three schemes. I mean, there are three schemes. And there was an initial coin offering, and he had a cryptocurrency startup called, and I can't pronounce things today, so Shopin, S-H-O-P-I-N. I mean, he seems to be a very, very bright and capable individual who's found a way to get people to trust him to hand over their money. And I think right now there's so many of these characters. There are so many of these characters in the world that are preying on the vulnerabilities of ordinary investors, people who want to make a buck, and they prey on their vulnerabilities.
Yeah. And when you see the Bitcoin price going up, you think, oh my gosh, here they come. And right now it's the worst time because the Bitcoin price, and this guy used Ether for shopping to milk 42.5 million of unwilling investors, about 4,000 of them. When you see, economy is in a mess around the world, but Bitcoin is doing massively well. So you can be damn sure that there's going to be someone out, a few companies that are going to, they're going to pull some scams on crypto right now.
Well, what drew you to the story of Iran Eyal?
I think what drew me to this fact was, I'd met him before, back in, I think it was 2010, and I'd interviewed his business partner in 2008, and he struck me as a completely charming, almost like the nicest person you could ever meet. And I don't want to sound like stereotypical, but this is how they always turn out.
What is a confidence trickster if they're not perfectly charming, perfectly believable, somebody you would want to take home to
and
meet your mother? Yeah.
And very good with words. He was a good communicator. And he was also, if you see the guy, he's not very tall. He looks very gentle and meek. And it doesn't look like the kind of person that's going to do bad to you. But, the question is, did he actually really want to do bad to people, or were they just pawned in the way to him? He'd use, he'd say, Nicholas Hyman from Facebook put in $100,000 in Springleaf, and he'd send this material out to, with a couple of other names to investors to get money from. And meanwhile, Nicholas Hyman had never invested any money in the company. All he'd said was something to the fact that I'm interested, or I'll have a look at it. And he grabbed onto these kind of things. He got a Bulgarian to web scrape well, it was about 140,000, and then you added up, eventually you got 180,000 names or profiles of people that he used on his platform, which was a crowdsourcing platform to reach market experts and designers and advertising types. And meanwhile, those people were not in his network. They were just, you know, web scrape, you know, that kind of thing. And he would say things like, he would talk about who he was going to do business with, but it would make, you know, the potential sales. So you never say how much the business was actually generating, because the business wasn't generating a lot of money.
How did Barry Tannenbaum do it? I mean, Barry Tannenbaum let it be known that Sean Summers was investing, and this one was investing, and that one was investing. Yeah. And this was, you know, the elite were investing in his scheme to bring in the components for antiretroviral drugs. What did South Africa need at that moment in time? It needed antiretroviral drugs. We were terrified of HIV, and it was really, really scary time. Now we're terrified of money and running out of money, and we're vulnerable to all kinds of stock market shenanigans. And here comes Eran Egal and says, you know what, I will solve your problem for you. I will give you peace. I will give you comfort, and I will take your money. And people willingly give their money to these guys. And what was there? I mean, you say that he was very charming, and he was very smart, and he was very quick. I mean, was he always crooked? Was he destined to end up in jail one day? Because I see that he was eventually deported back to Israel, the country of his birth.
I spoke to his, I don't think he was, I don't know if there's such a thing as someone being born crooked or like that. I spoke to some of the people that went to school with him, and they all sort of said he was a very unassuming person. You know, he wasn't like the popular or anything, but he didn't come across as someone who was going to scam you. And even when he was here in Cape Town, when he was running Springleaf in Cape Town, there was some BSing going on. You'd tell investors, I'm going to do this and that, and then the money didn't, they'd put in money, and then they'd say, why haven't you done this? And they said, oh, we need more money. That kind of things only really took off into, you know, when he started the lies in that sort of seemed to have started when he moved to New York, and he'd always wanted to go to New York. He told a girlfriend of his once that, you know, that's where he's going to go. And there was this in pictures that I had access to his Facebook account as well. He, I don't know why, but he let me access his account when he knew I was writing a book on him. You know, the pictures show a very ordinary, down-to-earth person. And then as soon as he gets to New York, there's a sort of time, I think it was around 2014 or something, he shaves his head. He starts looking really sophisticated. He starts wearing expensive designer clothing. And there's this distinct change that he undergoes. And he moves from this like really bohemian kind of haunt in Williamsburg next to Manhattan. He moves to like the tallest, newest, shiniest building. Like on the 38th or 39th floor of this massive monstrosity. And you see that, yeah, so he undergoes the shift. And I think he was to fuel his lifestyle. The fraud had to, I don't think he thought he was doing, I think he thought he was justified in what he was doing.
Don't they all? Oh, don't they all? Yeah. I mean,
funny thing is he's a victim of the sector, that the tech sector, this fake it till you make it syndrome. You hype things up because you're not dealing with a real product. You're dealing with some technology that's on a computer. You can sort of hide behind things.
How do we avoid getting swept up by guys like Eran Eyal? What are the warning signals? I mean, does he display classical characteristics? Because a lot of people are really nice and honest. He was just seemingly nice and crooked.
I really, you know, that's a real, really tough one, because he fooled everyone I spoke to. He fooled, you know, he'd say certain people were advisors in his company, and that those people were never advisors, or CTOs and they were, so yeah, it's really difficult. I mean, I don't think anyone can read this book and say it's an advice, it's a guideline to someone who's investing in the tech sector. It could be like a cheat sheet for someone who is in the tech sector running a business and wants to kind of pull off a scam. If you're really good with words, if you have a compliant media that will just use your press release as it is and hardly ask any kind of probing questions. And I was able to kind of do a lot of investigative stories because I had that. After he was arrested, something about the story just caught me, and I thought that there has to be something. Is he really guilty of these charges? And I started looking into it, and I thought that at that time he was arrested for Springleap, and he was running a different business then that he founded called Shopin. And it turned out that, you know, after doing a couple of stories, I started seeing, you know, digging up that he was onto the same kind of fraudulent things there at Shopin as well. The entire tech sector is full of this kind of overhype. And I think one warning kind of bell, if you want to call it, is when people use big terms and they don't sort of, you actually have to ask them, no, how does your actual product work? You have to be very cynical, almost like an old hack, old journalist. And then you start, the bullshit detector in you starts seeing, I saw a lot, working at VentureBurn for like the last 3 years until June last year, you know, I saw a lot of these kind of overhyped business propositions. Someone would land funding and then you do an interview and you'd kind of bring the business down to size. You're like, oh, that's a good business, but it's not like you can shoot the lights out. But of course, the press release and the PR people, and they, because how it works in the tech sector is there's a PR person that's being paid. The journalists are hardly getting paid. I mean, they're like sort of living in poverty. So they all join the PR sector. They are getting paid, that pump their press releases to, in the tech sector, it's mostly blog kind of publications, yeah, or blog-like publications. And these guys, and it's like literally, can you think, it's like, instead of 20 people, they have like sort of two there, one person, and that person is overworked. They can hardly pick up the phone and do proper investigations. They just use the thing as it is. They're also trying to get funding or investment or advertising. So they don't want to rock the boat too much. It's this whole thing, he could get away with it because of the compliant media, and he's got a marketing background.
The book is in stores. Thank you, Stephen Timm. We must leave it there. Forgive me, but the author of At Any Cost, it's a most astonishing story about a guy called Eran Ayel, a guy you would have loved to meet, a guy you would have loved to have a drink with, a guy you would have loved to have handed your money to. And I hope that you didn't, because there will be others, Eran Ayels, who will be happily taking your money away from you. If you look at the modus operandi, and there's so many parallels with so many other crooks that we've had to contend with in the last couple of decades.